This is a mess. This is an impossible mess.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Melrose Place. Horns. Today's episode is season 5, episode 13, Crazy Love. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
What?
Hi.
Hi.
Before we get into this episode, let's talk about what's happening on our Patreon this week. Again with this episode 98, dropping June 3rd. Let's read about Tiffany Thiessen, cover girl of Teen Magazine's December 1994 issue. This is halfway through her first Val season on 90210. The issue is not online. We will have visual aids for all the stuff that we talk about, though. So make sure that you are in the Patreon for that.
Mm-hmm. Also, be advised that the May edition of Again With Them, which is our monthly digest recap of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210MG, that will be dropping this Thursday, June 2nd. This is a perk for Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. We listen so you don't have to, and then we talk about it. We'd love you to join us. And you can do that at patreon.com/againwiththis.
Just a mini tease about this month's Again With Them as well. They do a 90210-on-1, which it's not, but with Valerie Wildman, who plays Christine Pettit, the FBI agent slash Dylan's would-have-been stepmother. And she's real into angels, and they talk about it a lot. So you're going to want to hear.
Did she bring all her angel toys with her?
You know, I'll let you wait and hear the exciting discussion.
No. That's Seraphim. Don't touch that one.
Angels. Oh, God. Angels people are like abolish the penny people. Like, once you scratch that surface and it's revealed, it's a lot and you can't get them off the subject.
Anyway, patreon.com/againwiththis, once again, is where you find all of that. Now, speaking of angels, it's the holiday episode of Melrose Place for season 5. So let's get into it.
Speaking of fucked up parties.
Yeah.
Oh.
Our B plot. Happy holidays may not be in the cards for Jane, nor for Jake and Allison. We open on Jane walking Sherry into the courtyard. Sydney keeps her head down walking past them, but suddenly Jane is interested in Sydney again and calls her over to make introductions. And given how Jane has been treating her, Sydney is within her rights when she makes it weird by haughtily telling Sherry that Jane already has a family, whereupon Jane hustles Sherry off, Sydney still yelling after them. And inside her apartment, Jane claims Sydney doesn't mean half the things she says, but showing more empathy than Jane has, Sherry notes that it must be hard for Sydney to deal with a new person in Jane's life. And then Sherry picks up a framed photo of Jane with her parents, which is a still of the three of them from when Jane arrived back at the family home in, quote, Chicago, unquote, like 4 episodes ago. Like, oh, I don't remember there being a photographer at this arrival. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, out of focus and weird. Mm. Like, no one would keep that photo and who took it. And yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, you can see in the visual aids. But anyway, they go on. Clip 2.
They look like nice people.
They are. But right now, I just want to get to know you, Mom. It's all right if I call you that, isn't it?
Well, sure. If you'd like.
Good.
Oh, my God, no. Jane. Read a room. So bad.
Yeah, she's just, I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Yeah.
This whole storyline is embarrassing for her and vicariously for us.
Yeah.
And her hair is also embarrassing. She looks like a Mars Attacks creature. It's not okay. Mm-hmm. Just let it lie down on her head.
Yeah. So Jane wants to know more about Sherry, who says Jane's biological father was, as she puts it, a stuntman. They hadn't been seeing each other for long when Sherry got pregnant. And they were still going to get married, but then he was killed in an onset accident. And Sherry was just starting in her career and had no resources. She went to Jane's biological father's family in Chicago for help. They didn't give her any, and she still never forgot about Jane, and produces a snapshot of herself holding a newborn Jane. And impulsively, Jane blurts an invitation for Sherry to stay with her for the holidays. Okay, Sam's already sleeping on your couch. What? This never comes up, and it makes me furious. Where is Sherry sleeping for this visit?
Yeah.
Anyway, she agrees. That night, Shooters is slammed. Allison hates this time of year and begs Jake to hire a new server. So you let Matt resign without hiring a replacement? Cool management decision. But instead, Jake yells to the room that the next drink is on the house. And Allison evidently does not think this is a great solution. And it's not going to make things any less stressful when she goes to the back to hold her pounding head. And Jake leaves the bar unattended to follow her after having just ordered a round for the house. But what she's upset about is not her money. Clip 3.
Hey, where's all this coming from?
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a Scrooge. It's just that Christmas is never much fun around my house.
Why can't it just be about the fact that he let Matt go, didn't hire a replacement, didn't have extra staff on hand for the holidays, and then just made more work for the waitstaff that is, P.S., not going to get tipped on correctly?
Right.
Like, and while I'm up, aren't they partners now?
Yeah.
Can't, like, someone needs to hire extra staff. How about the person who has to work doubles during the holidays? Which is annoying, because you got a bunch of people who aren't used to drinking. Ugh, fucking Jake.
Also, like, does Jake know about her whole thing? Like,
yeah, I don't remember.
I'm not saying they needed to have a conversation, like, in season 5 where she's like, oh, by the way, remember in season 2 when I didn't marry Billy? Here's why.
Right.
But, like, it's also not clear what the if Jake knows what the issue is. I assume he did, but it's right. Also weird.
And it's Well, if they're not going to make that, I mean, sorry to use the word explicit in this context, right. But if they aren't going to make that explicit, like, isn't the default kind of not loving the holidays at this point?
Especially for a TV character. This is extremely common.
Yeah.
Anyway,
where's all this coming from? Like, it's the Christmas episode, Jake. Connect a dot.
Yeah. Anyway, Allison says just once she would like to skip the holidays. And what do you know? Jake's Christmas gift to her is a ski trip to Park City, and she is thrilled. Over to Sherry's, where a very excited Jane is helping Sherry pack a suitcase and babbling about sharing all of the holiday traditions that Jane loved as a kid. And then the door opens. It's a guy named Ed with flowers, who apparently had a date with Sherry that she forgot. Sherry apologizes, explaining that she's going away for the holidays with Jane, her niece, and a seemingly oblivious Ed then warmly comments on the family resemblance. They could be sisters. When he's gone, Jane wants to know why Sherry lied to him about their relationship. And instead of saying, shame at having a child out of wedlock that I didn't raise, which has been her vibe this whole time, Sherry says it was her vanity because she doesn't feel old enough to have an adult daughter, which she barely looks at, so who cares? But she promises to do better. And some number of days later, Jake and Allison make it to their very nice chalet where they've, like, come in and lit a fire before they even got there. How, again, how any of this, but how does Jake afford this?
Yeah, seriously. Not hiring another waiter, I guess?
I guess, but if you have this much money, like, buy a house and start building equity, Jake. Damn. But, of course, we know why he won't. Jake is psyched, but Allison just crabs about their luggage having gone to Tucson. She's annoyed that everyone other than herself is so cheerful about the holidays and spending time with their families because to her it feels forced. Jake agrees that some of it is, but that he thought they were having fun. Also, by the way, no empathy in any of this from Allison for Jake being like a complete orphan, like has no relationship with his biological father. His other two closest relatives are dead, one kind of by his hand. So I
completely forgot about Jess. And Joe. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Season 5 is so long. Yeah. Boring.
Anyway, Allison keeps remembering the fake happy Christmases she had as a kid when she couldn't look at her father. And he, again, we don't know what Jake knows about that, but he sits next to her in front of the fire as he tells her about his bad childhood Christmases. His mom would go out to get the turkey, but come back with an empty bottle of gin. Again, leave these things in your car, characters on the show. You don't need to bring it in. But Mrs. Hansen is drunk in most of Jake's memories of her, but that's history. And the two of them will never be their parents. They need to start making their own traditions because they're a family now. And so every Christmas, they will fly to Park City, lose their luggage, then go buy a bunch of new clothes, which honestly sounds great to me. But other than the skiing part, it sounds great to Allison, too, because they kiss as the camera pans over to a lit up tree and the falling snow outside. And a director was very, very proud of that shot, which is quite showy. Back in L.A., Jane decorates her tree with Sherry, peppering her with questions about her dead biological father, Tom Stevenson of Chicago, and trying to ignore Sherry's obvious discomfort with this line of discussion. And when Jane finally drops it, Sherry admits she was lying about all of that. Jane's biological father was a B-movie producer that Sherry boned to get a part. And there's more. Clip 4.
When I was 18, I won a beauty contest. First prize, a trip to Hollywood and a screen test.
Second prize, $10.
I came and got a little apartment, a few bit parts, and that was it. I wrote home lying about everything. I couldn't bear to admit to them that I wasn't doing well. They'd pinned all their hopes on me. And when you get desperate, you do really stupid things. Anyway, after I was pregnant, I went home to have you, to raise you. But all I got was how disappointed everyone was in me, how I'd let them all down. So I called the sisters and I put you up for adoption. And I came here to try again. But it was different the second time. I lost something. Desire, I guess. By that time, all I could do to make a living was to be a secretary.
God, no! A fate worse than death!
A scandalo!
My God, there's nothing wrong with being a secretary. It seems like a very nice job. She's got a great apartment. Her life is fine. The other thing about all of this is that, like, even in her own stories where she's explaining, I lied before, there's lies in the story. And this is going back to, like, the very first time she met Jane and pretended that was her house. Like, if all of this is an end in Sherry being some kind of huge con artist, they're really shitting on this character for no reason. Like, she's just constantly lying.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, maybe she and Shelley are related.
Yeah, maybe.
Shelley
and Sherry.
Where's the Halfway Cafe production company?
Anyway, Sherry sent money to her sister every week, which helped with Sherry's guilt. Let's wrap it up. Clip 5.
You're just so scared you'd hate me.
You're my mother. It doesn't matter how it happened or even why. I still love you no matter what.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. My kingdom for the sex guitar.
Sleep in heavenly peace, indeed.
Donna Mills is actually doing pretty good work with this barf salad.
Yeah.
Jane is just being such a clingy creep. I don't know.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is what we've talked about before, which is the storyline would have made more sense for Sydney to have, because every other bit of backstory that we've gotten about the sisters is that Jane was the golden child and Sydney was the black sheep. And so it would make more sense for Sydney to be like, now I finally understand why I never felt at home in my family.
Right.
But here we are at this point instead. And as you say, Donna Mills is good. And obviously she knows how to be in a nighttime soap. So She's putting it over. But the other issue with the plotline is that Jane is acting like she is 13 and not almost 30.
Yeah.
With all of this, like, Mom, it's all right if I call you that, right? Like, no, be normal. You're an adult. Anyway.
Yeah. Like, Lindsay Lohan's characters in The Parent Trap would be ahead of you sort of emotionally on this shit. So simmer.
Anyway, on to the A plot. Peter goes to a shrink. Kimberly and Matt probably should. And there's an art heist? There's an art heist. Amanda is getting dressed for work when she casually tells Peter, still in bed, that she made him an appointment that day if he can tear himself away from the golf course. It's with a therapist. Peter does not recall asking her for help with any of his issues, but she apparently thinks all his recent behavior amounts to a cry for help. And honestly, it's not wrong. Like, she's got a point.
Yeah. And for him to be as disgusted as he is at the thought of going to, quote, a shrink when he was Kimberly's shrink.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have been, but he was. Yes. Is bonkers to me.
Well, so as she tries to leave, he grabs her arm, drink, and whines that lots of men like to play golf and gamble. And if the two of them are having problems in their relationship, why is it only he who has to go into therapy? Amanda, she says, is not the one drinking vodka martinis on the 19th hole every day. She just wants to stop fighting. And since Peter does as well, he will go. Over to Matt's place, where Megan's in bed with Michael and trying to butter him up so he'll agree to bone at her place because the complex is too noisy with people coming and going all the time, plus two of Michael's ex-wives live there. He warns her to stop nagging because that's what those ex-wives did. And then Matt proves Megan's point by coming home. Megan shamelessly walks out past him in her little cheetah print nightie, which is apparently the first time Matt has not only met her, but heard she exists. But anyway, he came back for some clothes. Michael comments on all the shopping Matt's been doing lately, which, not sure how he can tell that from the sleeves that are visible to him in the closet from where Michael is in the bed, but he's right. Matt says they're gifts from Dan. Michael would only buy that many clothes for a woman if he wanted to see her naked, har har, but if Matt wants to be someone's sex slave, it's his business, which, like, Matt is living with Dan. I feel like we already knew that had occurred, but as Michael goes to shower, Matt has to wonder, is he Dan's sex slave? But he wonders this by, you know, staring into the middle distance, as you do. It's a soap. And then Craig is in his office when Sam walks in, sketch pad under her arm for no reason. Leave shit in your cars. This is driving me crazy. It's not like you're in New York where it would make sense to be like walking around with a thing. Like if you got there, you came in a car. Leave stuff in your car.
And it's not one of those little, it's not like a notepad.
No,
it's like a 16 like... by 22 heavy stock notepad.
Yes. It's the size of an easel.
Yeah. And they are really trying to make this art thing happen, but everyone's understanding of what constitutes property ownership in the creative sphere is so bonkers that, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like art, 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 art.
Right.
But I lost track immediately of what alternate reality they were trying to construct for me and fixated on the fact that she wears her watch facing in. What, like, face on the inside of her wrist, which is a very visual artist thing to do in my somewhat limited experience, and is possibly the only interesting thing about her. If they make her tell one more fucking story involving crabs, I'm going to dive off of my patio.
Well, anyway.
Bye. Avenge me.
So Craig thought it would take Sam a week to come to her senses and bone him, I guess. So he is surprised when she throws the loft keys at him. He is so gracious and classy about it, she has to wonder whether she's made a mistake, JK Clipsix.
Aren't you being overly sensitive here? I mean, so what if I put the moves on you? What are you, a nun or something?
You really expected me to sleep with you for a loft, didn't you?
I expected us to have sex, yes. That's what people do when they date.
I want that back.
Well, you can't have that back.
What do you mean I can't have it? I painted it. It's mine.
You gave it to me. I like it.
No, you don't. It's a painting of where I live, about how I feel, about where I live. You don't care about any of that. Please, just give it back.
No can do, sweetheart. Gotta have something to remember you by. Thank you.
This is like a few episodes ago when it seemed like maybe they were going to do a heel turn for Kyle. That yeah. It's like, oh, did we, is this the second line now on the ice in the writer's room? Like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like goofy and annoying, but he wasn't like a complete, you know, emotionless pig. And also, well, I don't know. Like, you'd think Charvet would be better at being a sort of cold fish character because he's not a good actor, but he's just as bad at that too.
Well,
and to have him and Billy in the same storyline, like, guys, please help us, help us.
I mean, with regard to the heel turn question on Charvet, you know, we already have seen several episodes ago when he basically tried to date rape Sam in her apartment.
Right.
And, you know, not that they're really underlining it much, but her continuing to see him after that happened. And he was like, oh, yeah, sorry about that. I was just so passionate or about whatever he said,
right.
You know, underlines how bad she is at recognizing red flags, much as she did with Billy for a long time until she finally could not ignore them anymore. But, you know, this is not interesting. Like, the painting is what they're fighting about, A. And B, if she did decide to continue seeing him, not to take his side because I never would, but when he's like, yeah, I did think we were sleeping, we would sleep together, we're dating. Like, yeah, you've been dating for like a month. You know, it's not unreasonable to think like eventually it would happen. You're both adults. You're not Mormons.
Yeah, like this timeline seems a little casual to me, like, and not in the casual sex type of casual, like, yeah, I mean, like, I don't think he's, my issue isn't that part of it, although that was like a little fucked up, and her being like, well, that happened, and I guess we'll keep seeing each other for a while is like only on a soap.
Right.
And not really okay. It's more his attitude in this and subsequent scenes where he really is leaning into being a, I don't care what you think of me, fuck off. Like,
right.
He, like, Charvet should be able to sell that at least, and he can't really. And it's a little bit off brand, I think, for the character, but maybe I'm just struggling to find things to think about at all in this storyline because it's so dull.
It is. Anyway, the scene ends with, Billy running into a shaken Sam on her way out. And so she tells him what just happened. And later, Craig announces that he's putting Billy in charge of transitioning the agency to be completely paperless because that's a copywriter's job for sure. He's already walking away when Billy confronts him about keeping Sam's painting and offers to buy it. But Craig tells him to save his money. If Sam wouldn't bone Craig after he rented her a studio, Billy has no shot. And Billy calls Craig a pig and returns to his desk, and Craig decides to take it for some reason. I don't know. Again, motivation, consistency, not a concern in season 5.
No.
Over to the Woodward Burns kitchen, where Peter is pouring wine and reporting about his off-screen meeting with his therapist. And on any other show, you would assume the fact that we didn't see it means Peter didn't go. But on this one, who knows? I guess he did. Peter says he started glib, but then realized they were talking for real, and he thought it would be good if Amanda came the next time. She's already walking through with luggage as she says they can schedule something after she gets back from Santa Barbara. And he denies that she told him about this trip and holds her by the arm drink when she tries to answer a knock at the door. It is Craig, whom Peter has somehow never met before, and it doesn't go great. Clip 7.
Oh, perfect. You got Junior as your escort, huh?
Peter, please.
For your information, I'm her boss.
I'm having a conversation with my wife, if you don't mind.
Well, your wife has a job. Unlike you, from what I hear.
Craig, why don't you wait for me in the car?
Pleasure.
So let me get this straight, huh? I get sent to a shrink while you tell our most intimate problems to that little weasel?
This can't be about jealousy, because if you think there's anything going on between Craig and me, you're wasting your time.
Well, everything I do lately is a waste of time as far as you're concerned.
Don't put words in my mouth.
And don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ugh. Like, come on, show.
Yeah.
They belong together. Everything was fine. If you can't make other storylines interesting, that's not Peter and Amanda's fault.
No.
Or ours. Stop punishing us.
It's true. Speaking of things not going great, the next day, Taylor in her very sharply cut but very pea green soupy pantsuit, which you can see in the visual aids, march into Kyle's before opening and immediately throw a fit at the sight of Sydney and her hair bump, which, by the way, I haven't always noticed the bumps that Sarah's been flagging for the visual aids, but this one is undeniable. You can see
it. Oh, Sydney's? No, yeah. My issue in that one was with Taylor's.
Oh, sorry. That's who I meant. Taylor's.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That, like, of all people to give the bump to, Lisa Rinna, like, no, that's much too much. And then from the side, she really looks like a 1950s pickup truck in shape. It was really a dark time.
Yeah.
With that style. I never tried it. And as a result, I regret fewer pictures.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I guess the issue Taylor's mad about is she heard Kyle didn't actually return Peter's money since hiring Sydney was contingent on that. But anyway, that is not made clear. Kyle pulls Taylor aside to say Sydney got them a gig catering a charity auction. Taylor declares that she will not participate. And after Kyle has returned to the kitchen, Taylor asks which of the paintings Sydney tricked Kyle into buying is her favorite. Sydney likes Marilyn Monroe's house, so Taylor takes it down and donates it to the auction to get it out of the joint. And then Kimberly and Megan meet on a pier so that Kimberly can tell her how she solved Michael's money problems with accidental death insurance. Clip 8.
I don't understand accidental death.
It means dying in an accident.
Oh! I mean, come on. I know Megan's not as smart as Kimberly, but I hope she knows what accidental death means.
Oh my God. Although based on that line reading, it's not clear that actor or character knows what anything means. I don't understand accidental death. Hey, Smithers is screensaver. Ask for another fucking take.
So Kimberly explains she's going to die by suicide and make it look like an accident. Megan is understandably upset, but Kimberly seems giddy because she's dying anyway. Who cares how or when? Megan claims she cares about Kimberly and can't let her do this. Kimberly doesn't know why One More Secret is that big a deal to Megan, but Megan says it'll be blood money. And Kimberly cheerfully says Megan's going to have Kimberly's blood, money, husband, and home, so she should quit crying about it. Megan wants to know why Kimberly would tell her rather than just do it, but Kimberly thought someday Megan might tell Michael so he would know how much Kimberly loved him. This is getting dark. Megan doesn't want to hear any more details because she won't be able to keep quiet, so Kimberly should keep her out of it. That night, Sam goes to Sydney's to demand her Marilyn painting back. Sydney tells her about its recent donation to the auction. Sam whines that Kyle can't just donate her painting, but Sydney says he can if he owns it, which is the first Sam is hearing about money having ever changed hands. So where's her cut? And Sydney smoothly lies that she sold it to Kyle on a payment plan and the payments don't start until the new year. I mean, she's really thought of everything.
Yeah, but like, even if Sam did think it was on consignment, like, you get money for that. Like, did you just give these paintings to Sid out of the goodness of your heart so that people would see them? Because if that's the case, then why are you asking for the paintings back? And also, you don't get to ask for paintings back. That's not how this works. I know you're new-ish here, but this is Sydney Andrews. Get something in writing, you idiot.
Yeah. Like, we've certainly well established that she went to art school. Like, she did not take one class about the business of how art selling works, because it's not what Sydney's been telling her. That is for sure.
No.
Sam calls Sydney evil, then declares that she's going to buy the painting back herself. And Sydney warns her that it's $500 to get into the auction. And Sydney knows Sam doesn't make that much in a week. Jesus, Jane, she doesn't. And then in his office at the medical practice that night, Peter hangs up a call to hear someone walking in. Who else could it be but Taylor, the Christmas creep? Basically, this entire scene exists to recap their plot line to date, culminating with this at the end of their exchange, clip 9.
I've been there for you. I changed that diary and I put it where somebody would find it.
You did that. I never asked.
I put my marriage on the line for you, and all you can do is hurt me.
You said it yourself, Taylor. You've got a husband. Now go home to him. At least he wants you.
Does he, though? Seems like
he
wants Sydney.
Seriously, yeah. I wouldn't. She's a creep. Is A. B. I think it should probably be clear that it is much too late to try to set this boundary.
Yeah.
And does she just get to, like, not show up for work? Like, I just don't understand the working relationship at Kyle's. So, anyway. Also, I don't care. So, next.
The next morning, Billy is getting back from a run with his soccer ball keychain apparently jammed into his underwear. Nice continuity there. I was surprised they remembered that, because that was from, like, another season.
Yeah. Like, season one. So, well done.
I think it was season four, but it's possible he's had it that long. Mm-hmm. Season four is definitely when we saw Allison taking them. But anyway, he meets Sam in the courtyard with her laundry. Sam catches Billy up on the very recent theft of her sweater from the laundry room and the less recent shadiness surrounding her paintings. Just, the sweater never comes up again. Why would someone steal a sweater from the laundry room in this complex of, like, maximum 12 units? Like, you are never going to be able to wear it. She's going to see you. Whoever did it, Sydney. Billy suggests that D&D buy a couple of auction tickets in the name of client relations. He could write a memo about it on Craig's computer to create a paperless trail. That's my bad joke, not his. And then it's the auction, which is apparently a disaster because the waiters don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Matt brings Dan over to look at the original Maltese Falcon from the movie. Sarah, you have a link about this, which we'll put in the show notes from Vanity Fair, but do you want to just give a pricey?
Yeah, I mean, the article is by Brian Burrow and just writes about, like, the very weird provenance of this actual prop and whether the one that is currently wherever it is, this article is some years old, is the real one, but then the one that the one that's in the show just looks like this very sad. It's like when you're at the dollar store and you're like, I guess I'll buy a Frisbee. And then there's a whole rack of, like, you know, Frosboo brandless flying discs, and they're all kind of melty looking.
Uh-huh.
That's this version of the Maltese Falcon.
Okay.
And then my favorite is that the card, you'll see this in the visual aids, but the card is like from the film starring Humphrey Bogart, like, as opposed to the film starring Pauly Shore. Like, Jesus Christ. The show is set in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Anyway.
So Dan thinks they should get this Maltese Falcon. Matt laughs off the suggestion since it's going to go for thousands. Dan insists, and they initially cordially argue about it before Matt finally puts his foot down. Clip 10.
You know, Dan, you're not listening to me. I said no. I mean no. Well, take it easy, all right? You don't have to get all worked up about it.
No, Dan, you know, I'm not someone you can just buy extravagant gifts for, right? I'm not an accessory for you to dress up. I have my own opinions. I make my own decisions.
No. When you decide to get down off that high horse of yours, then maybe we can have a conversation.
This conversation is over.
Hey, wait a second.
Arm grab.
Can you tell me things?
That little that you can hear at the end of the clip is Matt shaking off Dan's arm because things are starting to get bad. Not so bad. Matt moves out, as you'll see in the next episode, but you know.
Yeah.
So even though Taylor declared she would not have any part in the auction, here she is to deploy the waiters in a way Sydney was too inexperienced to handle herself. And Kyle comes out on the end of this totally horny for Taylor's managerial skills, and they agree that they're a good team. And then it's the auction. The Marilyn Lawn painting is up first. I mentioned back when we first saw it, this was a gala committee painting, that we'd hear more about it later. And guess what? Later is now. Here's what they have to say from the website. Sam's art looks distinctly and deliberately like David Hockney's paintings with their bright pastels and flat, sun-drenched LA facades. But Sam's paintings depict the less sunny parts of Southern California life. They are all scenes of infamous LA locations where horrible violence or death occurred. The first in the series is based on a police photograph of Marilyn Monroe's bungalow taken on the day she died. When it was first in the show, we did a side-by-side of the painting and the photo in the visual aids for that episode. So the auction paddles, made for the scene where Sam's paintings are being sold at a charity auction, mimic Marilyn's curves and are numbered with her measurements. The other LA painting subjects include the condo from which the Rodney King beating was filmed, the Viper Room where River Phoenix OD'd, the Ambassador Hotel where Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated, Nicole Brown Simpson's house, OJ's Brentwood Estate, Sharon Tate's house, the LaBianca Mansion, and the Melrose Pool where Brooke drowned. Executive producer Frank South considered this his favorite marriage of content and production needs, colorful paintings with a dark history. And the paddles are 35, 22, 35.
Okay.
Back to the show. Bidding on the painting starts at $2,000. Billy hisses at Sam when she bids it up to $5,000, so she has to hitch back that she's driving up the price. And she's bidding against Jackie Childs from Seinfeld, by the way. She can see the visual aids.
Was also a demi-villain on the last season of Ba-ba-ba-ba-bash! Nice. Colon Legacy. Yeah.
Jackie declines to go up past a certain point, and Sydney, distracted by the McBride's canoodling at the back of the room, accidentally puts her paddle up and ends up the winner at $7,000. Whoops. No. Then we're in Santa Barbara, per the Chiron, even though the establishing shot is of a restaurant called The Bistro, which countless previous episodes have given us to understand is in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a franchise. Who's to say? Inside, Craig and Amanda strategize about the prospective jeweler client who is en route. She is putting on some products so she's ready to run shit, because that is what she does, demoting Craig to necklace clasping duty, which is unfortunately when Peter walks in and sees them, and he briefly, like, kind of hides to see if anything else incriminating happens, but then Craig just returns to his seat, and Peter comes raging over anyway. Clip 11.
Well, this is a romantic little scene.
It was before you showed up.
I'm not talking to you, pal. As far as I'm concerned, you don't exist.
Peter, sit down and lower your voice. You're making a fool of yourself.
No, you're making a fool of me. I come all the way up here to tell you something very important to me, to us. And I find you getting showered with jewels by Wonder Boy here.
We are meeting a client who happens to be a jeweler. Craig is not giving me anything. Believe me.
Well, I don't know what to believe. You send me to a shrink while you just hightail it up to Santa Barbara and play footsies with this little twit?
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
If you haven't noticed, Amanda, I'm in a bit of a slump. Or did you forget that part of the vows, you know, for richer or for poorer? Or maybe you just skipped the vows completely.
Why don't you leave her alone? You're embarrassing everyone, and our client's going to be here any minute.
Oh. I see why you like him so much. I mean, he's so young, you can mold him just like putty, huh? You say speak, and he barks.
You are acting like a real child. Now pull yourself together and go. We'll deal with this at home.
Well, I'd love to, baby, but you're never there.
Get out of here, Peter. Stop making such a scene.
Oh, come on, Amanda. I mean, this really isn't a scene yet.
Jumps a tray.
Yeah. Now it's a scene.
It's totally, it's stranger's food. Like, what did they do to you, guys?
Yeah, somebody, like, took a tray to the temples to, like, at least aim it at Craig.
Yes. Take a plate off of the tray, like, smash it into his chest so he looks like a mess before the client gets there.
Yeah.
Think it through. Come on. The next day back in Los Angeles, Sydney shows up at Jackie Childs' house. His name here is Walter, by the way, with the painting that he lost to her, except he was not bidding for himself, and this isn't his house. He brings her through to meet the actual philanthropist, his boss, Carter Gallivan, played by Chad Lowe. He is on rollerblades in the back, shooting into a net that says this, clip 12.
He scores! The crowd goes wild! You're the best, man! No one can beat you!
Dave's, I was watching this for Dave's, like, reaction.
This is like Rocky's robot in Rocky 3.
Yeah. Yeah, very normal thing for an adult to own. But this is how we can tell that this guy is quirky. So Carter is psyched to see the painting he wanted, while Sydney knows he's supposed to be the next Bill Gates. which I thought was the Parker Stevenson guy that Joe and Allison were fighting over a few seasons back. I guess he got replaced.
Microcomp.
Yes.
Never forget.
Carter still really wants the painting. Sydney will let him have it for $6,000, which was Walter's last bid. But Carter's happy to pay her the full $7,000. And when she tries to talk him out of it, he goes up to $8,000 if she can score a goal off him, which she does and celebrates. And that night, Sam stops by Billy's. He's all ready to pour her champagne and directs her to the couch where something large and painting-shaped is covered with a purple chenille blanket. I bet it's a record player. Surprise, it's the courtyard painting, which Billy denies stealing, explaining how he faked a bunch of emails about approvals on art to cover his removing it from the office. And they toast to her painting, finding its way back home, and to her interesting problems, agree to disagree. There's some more banter, and then they end up kissing. Elsewhere, Peter staggers back up to his door, but Amanda has beaten him to it and apparently changed the locks, and he pounds on the door and begs her to talk to him, which she finally does, yanking the chained door open a crack and barking. Clip 13.
It's over, Peter. Do you understand? Over!
Fine! Fine, it's over!
This is uncharacteristically terrible acting from both of them, and I feel like something is being worked out about, like, by the actors about they're not being together as characters anymore.
Interesting.
But it's bad. Sorry to both of them, but I expect better in this storyline, and I did not get it. I got some weird Andrew Shue type bellowing, and I don't like it.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, when your partner has changed the locks and will only open the door far enough for you to see a sliver of her face under the chain, fine, it's over is kind of the you can't fire me, I quit of this situation. Like, yeah, it is over. She said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, as Peter's walking out of the courtyard, Taylor's coming in. And clip 14.
Oh, she threw me out for good this time. Isn't that what you wanted, huh?
Go to hell, Peter.
Walk away from me. This is all your fault. Everything that you did, it's all your fault. Showing up like this, it was all working out.
All I did was open up to you and tell you the truth.
Digging up my past, my feelings, throwing yourself at me.
Let go of me, Peter. Let go of me.
Why? Why did you do it? Why?
No, they kiss! No! Angry guitar!
Yeah, did not buy that from Jack Wagner at all, either.
No.
Like, just really bad. Really bad. All around.
And furthermore, like, now Taylor's saying, let go of me, Peter. Bitch, this is all you have wanted since we met you. Like,
yeah.
Okay, this may not be how you imagined it, but still, not credible. No. Anyway, Merry Christmas. Let us close up with our episode MVP. Sydney made a grand.
Michael? Managed not to do anything that annoying. I think I'm actually going to say, though, whoever told Andrew Shue to get those sideburns, because they're pretty foxy. They're Fair still enough. On the wrong face in every scene, but he looks good.
Mm-hmm. Least valuable player. I mean, basically everyone, obviously Dan, but I'm still going to say, Sam, this milk smells sour. I'm going to put it back and hope it's better tomorrow. Billy again? Really? Okay, girl. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we really are spoiled for choice, but I'm going to say Amanda because, girl, what are you doing?
Yeah. I don't like it.
No. Next time on Again With This, Dr. Dan breaks even worse, Taylor gets what she wants in a question mark, Jane drives Donna Mills to drink, been there, and football, 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 football. You'll want to kick our visual aids for the extra point when you check those out for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. Follow the links there to get our book, to follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and to join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra shit. I'm Deck Tall, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Merry Little Christmas, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Silent Night, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?